John Steinbeck, Cannery Row. The frog pool was square, 50 feet wide and 70 feet long and 4 feet deep. Lush, soft grass grew about its edge, and a little ditch brought the water from the river to it, and from it little ditches went out to the orchards. There were frogs there, all right, thousands of them. Their voices beat the night. They boomed and barked and croaked and rattled. They sang to the stars, to the waning moon, to the waving grasses. They bellowed love songs and challenges. The men crept through the darkness towards the pool. The captain carried a nearly filled pitcher of whiskey, and every man had his own glass. The captain had found them flashlights that worked. Huey and Jones carried gunny sacks. As they drew quietly near, the frogs heard them coming. The night had been roaring with frogs on, and then suddenly it was silent. Mac and the boys and the captain sat down on the ground to have one last short one and to map their campaign. And the plan was bold. During the millennia that frogs and men have lived in the same world, it is probable that men have hunted frogs. And during that time a pattern of hunt and parry has developed. The man with net or bow or lance or gun creeps noiselessly, as he thinks, toward the frog. The pattern requires that the frog sit still, sit very still and wait. The rules of the game require the frog to wait until the final flicker of a second, when the net is descending, when the lance is in the air, when the finger squeezes the trigger. Then the frog jumps, plops into the water, swims into the bottom, and waits until the man goes away. That is the way it is done, the way it has always been done. Frogs have every right to expect it will always be done that way. Now and then the net is too quick, the lance pierces, the gun flicks, and that frog is gone. But it is all fair and in the framework. Frogs don't resent that. But how could they have anticipated Mac's new method? How could they have foreseen the horror that followed? The sudden flashing of lights, the shouting and squealing of men, the rush of feet. Every frog leaped, plopped into the pool, and swam frantically to the bottom. Then into the pool plunged the line of men, stamping, churning, moving in a crazy line at the pool, flinging their feet about. Hysterically, the frogs, displaced from their placid spots, swam ahead of the crazy thrashing feet, and the feet came on. Frogs are good swimmers, but they haven't much endurance. Down the pool they went, until finally they were bunched and crowded against the end, and the feet and wildly plunging bodies followed them. A few frogs lost their heads and floundered among the feet, and got through, and these were saved. But the majority decided to leave this pool forever, to find a new home in a new country where this kind of thing didn't happen. A wave of frantic, frustrated frogs, big ones, little ones, brown ones, green ones, men frogs and women frogs. A wave of them broke over the bank, crawled, leaped, scrambled. They clambered up the grass, they clutched at each other, little ones rode on big ones. And then, horror on horror, the flashlights found them. Two men gathered them like berries. The lion came out of the water and closed in on their rear and gathered them like potatoes. Tens and fifties of them were flung into the gunny sacks, and the sacks filled with tired, frightened, and disillusioned frogs, with dripping, whimpering frogs. Some got away, of course, and some had been saved in the pool. But never in frog history had such an execution taken place. Frogs by the pound, by the 50 pounds. They weren't counted, but there must have been 600 or 700. Then, happily, Mac tied up the necks of the sacks. They were soaking, dripping wet, and the air was cool. They had a short one in the grass before they went back to the house so they wouldn't catch cold.